Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying
yes.
You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey,
and with a straight face, you're gonna tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. One of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Sure used to be. You stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons, we passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons, we waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed, we cared about our neighbors, we put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured disease, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars. Acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't care so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
All right, welcome back. It's a Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America. I'm your host, Issa.
And I'm your little ray of sunshine, Common Cow.
And we're back, guys. Guess what?
What? Is it Wiggy time?
It's Wiggy time.
Wiggy, 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 Wiggy.
Get Wiggy with it. So, yeah, today we're going to be talking about, and yes, there are going to be some rants, I'm sure. I've got one that I really want to rant about, this Philadelphia cop shooter thing.
I would like my rant with peppercorn cheese, a little pastrami.
Side of fries with that?
Sauerkraut, Thousand Island dressing on rice swirl bread.
Okay, side of fries with that?
No, I can't do potatoes, man. I'm on a diet.
Okay. All right, no potatoes. Then we're going to go with the salad on the side. Well, we're going to update you on the standoff in Oregon. There's been some interesting developments there from last week we were talking about. Of course, we're going to be talking about the shooting of the Philadelphia police officer, supposedly in the name of Islam. Now, words mean everything, people. Listen to me. Supposedly in the name of Islam. Obama's been voted.
Supposedly.
Yes. And Obama being voted the biggest gun runner ever while winning the Peace Prize. Why is it that they're asking the guns be taken away from we the people, yet those screaming the loudest for this to happen, to have armed security teams, not to mention all the money, the $60 billion that have been allocated to Saudi. We got to talk about that as well. Human slaves sue their traffickers. I think that's a bit of old news, but we have an update on that, so we're going to go and talk about that for briefly a moment. Refugees not welcome in Germany, but welcome everywhere else in Europe, I guess. Israel being sued for war crimes. Now, that one's interesting. We're also going to talk about the cost of war, both monetarily and in lives. We're going to be talking about all of this today, live. And I'm hoping that we get some
callers
in today.
You're live?
We are live.
I'm pre-recorded.
You're pre-recorded, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I've decided to call it a snow day, so I did my work last night, and, you know, you guys are good.
All right, good. All right, so he's pre-recorded, but I'm live. And don't forget that you can always chat with us on our website, wakeupinamerica.com. That's M-E-R-I-C-A, drop the A.com. Drop the A in the beginning. I got to get that. It's got to roll off the tongue better than that. Anyways, wakeupinamerica, M-E-R-I-C-A.com. You can chat with us by going to the Listen Live show. But then there's also a little telephone number on there, 646-929-2495. You're always welcome to call in, chat with us. And before we get started in tonight's festivities, I want to let you know we do have a celebrity in studio with us here, in Skype studio, if you would. We have John Lennon here, people. That's right. John Lennon is here. And I wish, oh, I wish that there's a way that I could show you John Lennon. But unfortunately, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to take pictures here on Skype, but our producer is now John Lennon. Who better? Complete with the glasses and the black hair and the brooding British attitude. That's right. That's right. Loki is now forever known as...
Ooh, you got the read between the lines.
I got read between the lines, but that's Lennon for you. You know how he is. He's not quite right in the head. Look at who he married. Anyways, moving on. What are we going to start with first? What do you want to start with, Cal? I'm going to let you pick the rotation.
I actually say the same thing that you just said about Hannah. Look at who she married. She can't be right in the head.
No, that just shows how she's perfectly right in the head because I am quite the catch. That's right. You heard me.
Okay.
Then. I am dashing with this magnificent beard that I am growing.
I don't know. I can't tell.
This jihadi beard that I got kicking off over here. My jihadi beard is here. So anyways, where would you like to start tonight? Come on, roll the dice. Roll the wheel. Spin the wheel. Let's see where it stops.
You know, I just want to play this because this is the greatest thing about the whole thing going on in Oregon. This was my biggest laugh today.
All right, let's do that. Let's start there in Oregon.
I'm going to play this clip for our listeners. It's only a minute long. But apparently, the Oregon protesters have been harassing the police, the sheriff says. So you got to listen. You guys are going to be rolling.
We've got a lot of help here in town from agencies across the state. And while I love having them here, I'd like to see them go home. But we can't get them to go home. Nope, they're not going home either until we get this resolved. So... I love you, Harney County. I love you guys. You know, the fact is, there's a lot of issues that need to be worked through in this country. There really are. And we're the folks that need to start working on it. But we don't need a bunch of negativity in our community. We don't need people wandering around worrying about what's going to happen to them. And we can't get things back to normal until we unite as a community and ask these folks to go home so we can start working together.
Is that not awesome that it's the cops saying, please just go home. Just go home.
Well, you know, I find it funny that he's actually the sheriff.
Yes.
So he is the highest elected official in that county.
Yep.
He has autonomy in that county.
Yep.
But here's the thing that troubles me with it. You have a town hall meeting to talk about what needs to happen, but you have the authority to make it happen. Now, of course, I'm not asking for a standoff, but I am saying there's the authority to get them off there because this is one of the things that they're talking about.
Right, but look at it this way. If he does it by force, then he's the asshole.
No, I'm not saying by force. What I'm saying is use their rhetoric against them. They're saying that the state has authority. The county has authority over the federal government. Okay? That means if you adhere to that, then here's the sheriff, the highest elected official in that county, representing that state, coming to you and telling you to leave. They have to abide by it.
Right.
I mean, my logic makes sense, right?
Well, it does.
Because they're sitting there saying that the federal government has no rights to that land. The federal government has no right to tell them what to do on state land, but the sheriff does.
And actually, Loki makes a good point. He asks, why isn't he telling the FBI to leave? Well, I think more to the point of this is he's trying to do it as a peaceable action.
Right.
You know, he's coming out to his town hall meeting, because as you could tell, some of the protesters, some of the followers were there.
Right.
And the town, you could hear in the background, was like, let him talk, you know, shut the hell up. So he's mm-hmm. trying to be what he actually is. He is a peacemaker. You know, that's what sheriffs were supposed to be. That's what their role was designed for, was to create peace. So he's doing it the right way. Hey, please go home. I don't want this to escalate. I don't want, you know, any more bullshit.
But is he going to take it to the next stage, which is to go to them and say, by the power invested in me, I'm now no longer asking you to leave, and I'm not coming with a bunch of armed men. You say that you're constitutionalist. You say that, you know, that I, as the sheriff, the elected official, the highest elected official in the land, as far as the law is concerned, then, okay, then you, that means that you have to abide by what I say. And what I say, based upon this town hall meeting, based upon the citizens that pay taxes, that also voted for me, you have to go.
Right. But like I said, he's doing it peacefully first. So this way, you know, later on down the road, he's like, hey, I asked you to leave. Now you're making me make you leave.
Right.
You know, so this way.
But I think he should take it one more step to peacefully do it. One more step would also help to show us, who are in the conspiracy, I'm doing my little bunny ears, the conspiracy realm.
We can't even see your bunny ears, man. You're just, you're not cool.
I'm doing my bunny ears. Just leave me alone about that, okay? So, I told you why.
This is unright.
I know, I'm sorry. But anyways, so, you should go take it another step to see if these people who, he did say he agrees with them, but, you know, would they be willing to abide by the same charter that they're telling the mainstream media that the government can't make them leave, that only the state has the power to do that because the state owns the land? And then you know, John does bring up a good point there. You know, John says, well, also, why isn't the sheriff asking the FBI to leave?
That was Loki.
It's a state matter. Oh, it should be a state matter.
What? It's Loki, not John Lennon, man.
John Lennon tonight, whether he likes it or not, whether you like it or not. John Lennon tonight.
I think if anything,
he looks like John Lennon. No, he's going to be John Lennon.
I think he's closer to Ringo Starr.
No, with the hair, the style, the way it is, yes. But with the glasses, no.
Ringo wore glasses.
No, he did not. Ringo did not wear glasses.
Later in years, he did too.
Later in years, he might have. Anyways. I came across this Washington Post article written...
By the way, Loki, that means I just called you old.
Yes.
Okay.
Written by Keith Nance, who's actually a cattle rancher himself. And I thought it was interesting to look at it from this standpoint. I kind of want to kind of read this here. They said, this week, as the Ammon Bundy-led seizure of the Federal Wildlife Refuge thrust Oregon ranchers into the spotlight, he says, while I don't agree with the occupiers' tactics, I sympathize with their position. And he says, being a rancher was always challenging and has become increasingly difficult under the Obama administration, you know, with Obama's land grabs. And I grew up ranching community in northeast Oregon. Even as a kid, he knew that he wanted to be a rancher. And after 8 years as a firefighter, he saved up enough money to start his own. And he wanted to work on the land, raising delicious, wholesome beef for their growing population. And for almost a decade, he had done this. And most days, he's up before the sun rises. He spends his morning tending to his horses, dogs, livestock in the winter when it is bitter cold. And then he's outside with his cattle, making sure their water isn't frozen, that they're properly fed in the summer. He often works 15 hours a day cultivating his crops and tending to his animals. Typical farmer life. Now, he loved the work. It was grueling as a rancher. And he's always one bad year away from financial disaster. Every purchase he made, from new cows at $2,000 a pop to a new piece of equipment worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, is a major investment. And his ranch operates on a very slim margins. So he had to be very savvy to make ends meet. Now, money wasn't the only challenge. Raising cattle requires a lot of land, much more than most ranchers can afford to own outright. so he had to lease about a third of the space that he used for private owners. But most ranchers aren't so lucky. The federal government controls a huge amount of land in the West, more than 50% of some states, like Oregon, and many ranchers must lease that space to create a sustainable operation. But utilizing federal land requires ranchers to follow an unfair, complicated, and constantly evolving set of rules. For example, the federal government agency might decide that it wants to limit the number of days a rancher can graze their cattle to protect a certain endangered plant or an animal species. Or they might unilaterally decide that the ranchers can't use as much water as they need because of a fight over water rights. Or they might take over land that once belonged to the state or private individuals, imposing an entirely new set of restrictions. Now, he says that he saw all this play out firsthand when the federal government considered listing the sage grouse, a chicken-like bird, as endangered.
That regulation
would have shrunk the amount of land where ranchers could graze cattle, putting many out of business and decimating the industry. But to avoid this, ranchers like himself and local officials spent months meeting with federal officials looking for a compromise. They ultimately found a middle ground. But we already have an enormous workload in our daily lives. The pressure of having to drop everything to lobby against a rule, which happens more often than you'd like to think, is a tremendous burden. Now, most of the time, those regulations were written by people with no agricultural experience and little understanding of what it takes to produce the nation's food. The agencies that control these lands can add burdensome regulations at any time. Often, they will begin aggressively enforcing them before ranchers have a chance to adjust. This forces us to either find new grazing land, reduce the size of the herd, or sell out completely. And in rural communities, this can have a catastrophic effect on the local economy and environment. Now, ranching is a billion-dollar industry in Oregon. Overall, agriculture accounts for 15% of the state's economy activity and 12% of the state's employment. The income of local farm generates double the money for the local economy as a supermarket income in the same area, according to a London-based New Economics Foundation. Now, the siege of their industry has only increased under the Obama administration. Officials are effectively regulating us out of business by enforcing a string of unprecedented environmental restrictions. In Mulhare, I got it right, county next to Harney County, where the current standoff is taking place, the Obama administration is considering a measure that will turn 2.5 million acres of federal land into a national monument, a move that would severely restrict grazing. These restrictions would cause a huge economic downturn for those communities. So these decisions are being made by people who are four or five generations removed from the food production. These rulemakers don't quite understand the industry and are being spurred on by extreme environmentalist groups asking for unreasonable policy changes. It's not that I don't care what the environmental community wants. In every part of my business, I try to find a balance between economics, Mother Nature, and the culture. And he knows that if we don't treat our land properly, we'll go out of business by our own hands. It is the utmost importance for us to be true conservatives, if we want to continue producing the most nutritious and safest protein in the world. But all too often, he's not given the autonomy to do so. He's given rules, not a conversation about how ranchers and government officials and environmentalists might be able to work together. That's an approach that fails everyone. So I thought it'd be interesting tonight if we talked about it from a rancher standpoint as well, that we brought that aspect into it as well. Because often we get caught up in the political aspect of it. We get to talking about the political side. And we don't actually look at it from the social economic or culture aspect of those that are actually on the ground. You know, those that are actually being more affected by either A, the politics of government taking over more land and arbitrarily deciding this is endangered, that is endangered, and therefore you cannot go in this area anymore. And then also that of the people and what they're standing for and they're speaking about. We have somebody in the chat room that wants to call in. They're going to have to wait because John Lennon obviously had to go talk to Yoko. So you have to wait till he comes back. Oh, there he is. John, I hope everything worked out with Yoko there. I think we got a caller. John?
He doesn't have his headset on. Hold on.
I know. John John, put your headset on. There you go, John. Hello, John. Welcome back, John.
If you had your camera on, you could just like wave at him and get his attention. But
yeah. Anyways, you could beat that until the cows come home, buddy. I'm not turning the camera on right now. I told you that, and I told you why. Anyways, John, I think we got a caller. Somebody's trying to call in. Go ahead and bring him in. You're on live You're on live with Issa and Cal.
You know, like always, Yoko has always been a distraction. So,
Yeah, I know. Yoko's a big distraction.
Hey, you know, you talked about the social and economic, you know, stuff revolving around Oregon. I kind of see that's like the crux. I mean, you played that clip from, you know, the sheriff, and, you know, all of a sudden the sheriff's sitting there going, yeah, we got to get them out, right, to get back to normal. Now, these people were ranchers at one time, but correct me if I'm wrong, that entire area, well, maybe not the entire area, is funded by federal funding. You know, they got a lot of park workers. You know, people have gone from taking care of cows and sheep and that kind of stuff to federal wildlife jobs, right? So they work for, well, the government. And the government is, of course, taking over more of that land, and they had all these problems, from what I see. So it's kind of like they've already taken over the entire land. They've taken over the culture over there, and, you know, they want them to leave. So while they can get back to business as usual, going to work for the parks and wildlife, and, you know, and then they'll sit there and go, man, it's a shame it took their land. Hey, where's my paycheck, direct deposit, and all that, you know. So it's a losing battle. It just sucks. Am I wrong when I kind of like rant on that?
No, actually, I think you bring up a valid point. I mean, because there is this, and has been this issue of our government being the largest employer, and of course, you know, the government would love nothing more. Neither would the top 1% love nothing more for either half of the country being employed by the government, therefore unable to say anything, because if they did, then they would lose their job. But then yet the other half on government or state benefits, therefore beholden to the state for their housing, their food, their insurance, their, you know, all of that stuff. So, I mean, this plays right into the role of it. They don't want a population that's in control of their own destiny. As this story that I read here, you know, he was a firefighter, and he worked for years, you know, 10 years to save up the money so that he can do what his passion was. See, the government doesn't want those kinds of people. They don't want us to be masters of our own destination. You know, they don't want us to be masters of our own destiny either. You know, they want us to be beholden to them. So, you know, that's the reason why we find that there's so much of a land grab going on. Because the more land they grab, the less that we could actually do what actually built this country to begin with, which is produce, cattle, you know, the farming stuff, which is, you know, half of the backbone of what built this country, and the other half is industrial, you know, private industrial manufacturing and mills and mines and things like that.
Right, right. And when I see the Oregon thing, I see like a, I don't know if it's a dichotomy, but it's kind of a travesty, at least, of the fact that people are willing to go, and initially when this thing started, I had a whole bunch of things, people are, oh, those crazy people, right? Why are they doing this? Right? And then you outline the story for them, you send it to an article, and it says, oh, yeah, they've been doing this for some time. They've run out a whole bunch of ranchers. Yeah, there was no wildlife, wild duck preserve until the ranchers. And then the government came in. Well, the government always comes in, and they always take your land. That's kind of their MO, and so they backtrack onto that. Well, we know they take their land. That's just what happens, and you have to accept it.
Right. The statist mentality.
Okay. Now, it is. Now, so these ranchers, right, well, they call themselves ranchers. Are they ranchers? Do they have cows? Do they feed anything? Or are they people that sit on blocks of land and go to work and drive around in government vehicles, you know, looking at birds, checking check boxes on, you know, clipboards and doing all this and that, and that allows them to pay their taxes and buy their food. You know, they've changed the culture, but they still want to be identified as ranchers. Are they ranchers, right? Because in that area, I don't know how many ranchers are there, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I don't understand it, but I think they call themselves ranchers, but they're not. You know, I probably need to do more research onto that and find out that there are ranchers out there.
Well, I'm sure that there are some ranchers, but when you look at the fact that 50% of Oregon is now government controlled, and there's another 2.5 million in the works to be taken, acres to be taken. You're probably right. They're probably less and less. But, you know, as we talked about in our last show, I presented and Cal presented evidence to show that this isn't just about cattle grazing rights, and this isn't just why the Bundys, Ryan and Amon, are involved in this. This also has to do with diamonds, gold, and yellow cake as well. And if we actually... and we talked about this last week as well, that if we actually did research, which I did a lot of research before last week's show, you know, and I found that a vast majority of the land that the government is appropriating, it's either one of two things. Either A, these endangered animals and plant life species are extremely intelligent and know that the safest places for them to go is in areas of this country that has high levels of diamonds, gold, and yellow cake, and they all mass in that one area, knowing that eventually the government will come and save them.
It does have cake. I mean...
It does have cake, yes.
I flock to places with cake.
That's right, that's right. Even the yellow cake. He loves the yellow cake. Or...
Let them eat cake.
Or what we have is we have... tax-funded surveyors, geologists on the government payroll in the energy department that spend millions of dollars a year surveying for everything that's natural gas, oil, gold, diamonds. And when they find a huge deposit of it, and if Native Americans, happen to be sitting on it, because we have to be politically correct.
No, we don't.
If Native Americans happen to be sitting on it, oh, too bad for you. We're going to go ahead and renege on our agreement to give you that land, or ranchers, or whoever, and we're going to take that land so that we can then turn around and sell it to a mining company or, you know, a resource company, which is exactly what's happened in Oregon, okay? The land that's been, a vast majority of the land that's been appropriated, particularly around the Hammond area, has already the rights to get the yellow cake and the diamonds and all that, has already been sold to an Australian company called Australian Energy LLC. It's a foreign company that has already been given the right to drill all this stuff out of there. Now, this is land that belonged to the Butte Native Tribe, okay? They were given 1.2 million acres in 1870. They are now down to 750 acres. That's how much of the land that they've had taken from them. And ironically enough, when you look at the land surveys, we find that the land that's been taken is land that is heavy in gold and diamonds and all that stuff that happens to build up around volcanoes. This is not a conspiracy theory.
No, sir.
This is a fact.
Those are natural parks, sir. We have to preserve those.
Yeah. So I think that if we continue on this path that we're going, you know, the government will continue to be the largest employer, which they were never intended to be. And as a constitutionalist attorney so eloquently put last week, the government has rights to only 10 square miles of Washington, D.C., and any ports or forts the states give them, or lease them, or loan them, or allow them to have. At any time, a state can say, I don't want Fort Bragg here anymore. Got to go.
Right. Okay. Well, I missed last week. I'm sorry about that. You know, all that kind of sucks, because I wanted to hear about all that stuff, and I'll have to go back in the archives and have a listen.
Well, great. Now you're behind.
Huh?
Say that again.
I said, great, now you're behind. You're supposed to keep up with the class.
All right, that's it. Move him to the front of the class.
You're getting a
C. I see we can't let him be in the back anymore.
You're getting a C on this grading period. You'll have to stay after and make up some work.
Well, the good thing is...
I'm going to cry.
Stephen, the good news is that our producer has done a wonderful job with our website. It is actually very easy
to find that. Did you actually just say something nice about Loki?
No, I said something
air?
Nice about John. No. I said something nice about John.
Oh, yeah, there he goes. Okay.
All right. I said something nice about John.
Mixing of words.
That's right. It's always a play on words with us. So, yes, John Lennon did a wonderful job at making it very easy to be able to go into our past shows.
Archives.
Just go to the show archive, and you put in any date, and bingo, bango, bongo. There you go. It's all yours. So that's the good news on that.
Well, that's good.
So
that's
there's
good.
Another
the bad
aspect.
News is...
What's the bad news?
Only the bad news.
There's not bad news because, I mean, ultimately, I think it takes us to this next segment. Can you play that other clip for me, Cal?
Which one would you prefer, sir? I have two.
I know, buddy. The one where Danica is there at the ranch interviewing them, asking some very poignant questions that I think we need to discuss tonight.
We're in Burns, Oregon, where nearby armed men continue to occupy Wildlife Reserve. The whole thing has become a huge community ordeal. Schools have been closed for safety reasons. The sheriff has told the armed men to leave, and right now he's called a town hall meeting for the residents to weigh in on it all.
Of how many people want to work this out peacefully? Yeah. They'd like these folks to go home.
Not that one. Not that one. Cal, not that one, the other one.
So let's say I'm a Muslim American.
There you go.
And I don't like the way the government has trampled on the civil liberties of members of my community. Should I then take a rifle and go occupy the Department of Homeland Security?
All we're doing is protecting the livelihood of the people here.
So we're walking onto ground zero of the occupation of armed men here at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. They've taken over these federal buildings. I'm told they're actually in there.
So this is the control room of this militia standoff?
Well, it's not a militia standoff. It's not even really a standoff.
A lot of people around the country are watching this, and they're looking at you guys and like, these white guys that came in with their weapons.
Oh, that's kind of racist, white guys.
Well, they're pointing out.
They're going to point out if it was all black guys, would we say those black guys all came in?
Yeah, they would say that, and they would say the federal response would be different.
No, they wouldn't. They would not say that. They would not say that. They would not say that, because now they're profiling.
A lot of people around the country are looking at what's happening here, and looking at the fact that there's really no law enforcement around here, and the feds haven't come in, and they say that if this was a group of African Americans protesting, and if it was a group of Muslim Americans, for example, the response has been and would be a lot more different, and it would be a lot more forceful.
My heart goes out to anyone who has violence perpetrated upon them. Okay, and we welcome any support from any from any community. Freedom has no color. It's colorblind. It belongs to all race, color, and creed. For myself, I worked hard with my own money to buy my ranch, okay? A lifetime dream to have my own. It takes a lot to get there. And so that's all we're doing is our own personal property, our own personal livelihood, our own personal lives.
I understand, but what's that's
and so
my personal...
So if there's a Muslim in the same situation, or a Native American in the same thing, most certainly they should kindly and as gently as possible protect their own life, liberty, and property.
Near the entrance, I spotted a familiar face, John Ritzheimer, the ex-Marine who organized an armed protest in front of a Phoenix mosque last year and who created a website selling anti-Islamic gear. And so I had to ask. A lot of people are saying, imagine if Muslim Americans took up arms and protested the federal government. What would the response have been? There is a double standard there. Do you think they would have gotten away with it, as you guys are?
Well, this
can I see, and I ask you that because I see a gun right there.
This is not about religion.
This is not about, this here is not about a religion.
What is it about?
So you're saying Muslim Americans, well, what do we have here? All I see down in there is Americans. Yeah, you guys.
But people are saying they're white Americans, and with that they have white privilege, that they can get away with certain things that people of color might not.
We have people of color that have shown up here. And,
really?
Yeah.
John, we're talking about who owns the land, and yesterday, the Native American Paiute tribe who claimed this as their ancestral land. They're saying you guys need to leave, and that this is their ancestral land that they were run off from and killed. What do you have to say about that? Do you acknowledge that?
I'm open to dialogue about it and learn about it, but I'm not educated enough on that to.
You're not educated on anything.
I haven't heard them. They haven't seen them. So
history.
Invite them into the conversation.
She said history.
The plot thickens.
Plot thickens.
So this was an interview done by Danica from Al Jazeera America. That should probably get a few ires up. But anyway, she does pose a good question that I think that all people of minorities should query. That we know from history that when Native Americans have taken up arms and tried to take their land back, we know what's happened to them. Entire tribes have been annihilated for that. We know through history when African-Americans...
Hold on. In the government's defense, you cannot genocide white people. There's just too many of us.
Okay, I'll give you that one. But we know through history in Oklahoma that the National Guard actually dropped bombs on a citizen town that was all black, that was defending their land from the KKK and surrounding white people that were trying to take their land. And we know that there was well over, from what we know, because of course the records don't show everything, that the records show over 200 men killed, but yet eyewitnesses that survived said that the numbers was way higher. And history just shows us over and over and over again. And the thing I liked about what Danica did right there was, you know, when she brought up about the Native Americans, of course, his go-to response was, oh, well, I don't know enough about that. I have to do some research. And then she just simply said, history.
You don't know history.
Well, come on. History.
Wait a minute. You want to stand on constitutional value, but you don't know history.
History. Right. And I thought it was, you know, going into the lion's den, so to speak, and posing that query, you know, to them, that what if it was Muslims that were doing the same thing, you know, or blacks or whoever outside of white, and is there? And I'll ask you, and if we got the caller on the line, I'll ask him too, if he's still on there. But I'll ask you guys: do you think that there is white privilege in the government and states response?
Oh, hell to the yeah! Oh, come on.
white privilege, really? Okay. Before I go there, I want to talk to that clip that you said. You know, the Constitution, as I know it, I don't know, a lot of people haven't read it, it provided for the Second Amendment to actually allow for a tyrannical government to, you know, try to take over, and then people are supposed to stand up. It doesn't define that they have to stand up for their own property, and the Bundy's going to somebody else's property unwarranted or anything else like that. They're standing up against the BLM, who is the federal government, who is taking over land all across the United States, is justified within the Constitution. Right, it's the fact that they print their own money, they give money to people, they make them slaves and all that other stuff. So they can make their stand anywhere they want. Is it going to work out? Oh my God, I don't think so. I really think it was a bad move. Constitutionally speaking, I do believe it's actually afforded in the Constitution for, you know, when a government goes rogue, right? People have to stand up for it.
We're not arguing that. We agree that there's an overreach of power not just the BLM, but in many different factions of the United States government, whether it be the IRS, the NSA, the FBI. You just the list goes on and on and on. The question is this.
I know, Issa.
Well, here's the question.
I know,
Issa. Okay, so give me the answer.
Give me the question, as you did.
How can you say you know? The question is this. The question is, if people of minorities, whether they were Muslims, whether they were black, whether they're Native Americans, if they were to do the exact same thing, and they would be justified according to the Constitution, I agree with you 100%. I mean, Benjamin Franklin has notated on this. George Washington has notated on this. Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine. I mean, the list goes on and on and on with the founding fathers that have all said in roundabout ways that when your government oversteps its power, it is the responsibility of the people to take up arms and to overthrow that tyrannical government. So I'm not disagreeing with that aspect of it. But what if,
right,
in today's age, with the Islamophobia the way it is, with the anti-Mexican, you know, I mean, basically they're anti-anything that's M, Muslim or Mexican or mulatto or whatever, okay?
Mayonnaise? Are they against mayonnaise?
Anti-mayo. Ooh. Anti-mayo even.
Ooh, that's,
but if they
that's
were to do
American.
The same thing. All right, as what these gentlemen, Ammon and the Bundys and all these other people have done there.
I see where you're going. I understand.
What do you think? I want to hear your opinion. Would they be afforded?
Here's my opinion. First off, we have a racist government, right? You know, it's called equal opportunity, right? They have their guidelines and their metrics, and everybody's afforded every whatever, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, if the black people do this, then we say poor black people. If the Asians, we call them smart, then we say, well, it's racist, but they are smart. You know, if it's the Muslims, then we say, oh, dang Muslims, right? They have all these buckets for us, right? If the white person does it, well, it's the hick, it's the yokel, it's the white person, white privilege. I believe that the U.S. government is a very racist organization. They already put us all in buckets. They're not very good buckets, and they tear us apart. And they're not right. They're not just, right? So, yes, if a black group took over a building with guns, then they'd be going, oh, man, that sucks. So if a bunch of, you know, people from Mexico, they call Mexicans or Hispanics or whatever, then it's, oh, the poor oppressed Mexicans. The white people
so you're
go over building are terrorists.
So that's
the thing.
So your stance is that if brown people that are not in the Islamic faith were to do it, then that basically the media, the police, the government, everybody would treat them the same as the white militia?
My stance is kind of like yours. The fact is that these people that they're saying are Muslims that are running around the world creating terror are not, quote, Muslims. They're just, people that don't have faith in their soul.
Right, they're just
they're
bad people. Right.
Right?
Correct.
And they've assembled their gangs, their groups, they're out for their own interests, they're creating terror. And we're labeling them as Muslims and saying, oh, those Muslims, but they don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. They don't know what the Quran teaches. They've never read it.
Right.
They've heard stuff. They hear all sorts of stuff, right? But all they know is they're being attacked, but they don't know why. And we attack everybody. We're all over the Middle East, right? You look at your cell phone. Where did that come from? Look at all this stuff. But anyways, yeah, the United States is a racist nation. And, well, hey, I'm white in a racist nation. And they say that, well, I have white privilege. Show me the privilege. Right?
Well, I think that kind of does show the privilege there, Stephen. I agree on a lot of the stuff you're saying, but I have to humbly disagree with you on the white privilege aspect of it. And the reason why I disagree with that, and the reason why I take my own personal life, you know, being raised in Brooklyn and predominantly minority, I was the minority in my neighborhood growing up. And I look at, I had the exact same advantages or access or lack of access to the exact same advantages as everybody else. But yet I always noticed throughout my life, throughout my education, throughout everything I've been able to accomplish in my life, I always found that there was always something a little extra for me, even though I came from the exact same rat hole. And I can say that because I'm from there. Anybody else said that, and I'll cut your throat. But I came from the exact same rat hole as they did. But yet, I look at a lot of the people I grew up with, and they're dead or in prison, or they're still stuck there with no aspirations to go anywhere. On top of that, I also look at recent history. Now, of course, we can't compare today to the 1950s. I mean, it's just, it's asinine. You can't do that.
No.
But I could compare recent events. And we look at the Black Lives Matter movement, which, of course, Cal and I have the same mindset that say that all lives matter, but at the same time, we sympathize.
Well, except, and, hold on, except for Trump. His doesn't matter. Trump.
Yeah, because he's not really alive. He's a zombie. anyway, so we look at how the Ferguson and the Baltimore situation played out. Now, there's already been evidence that has been introduced and proven that the instigators, violent instigators with the clashes with the police were actually undercover police. There was actually a journalist that was there that filmed them and actually ripped their masks off their face. Where they were immediately taken behind the police line and were protected. And this was in Baltimore, and the next day a press conference by the chief of police was given where they said that they were there doing police work, but yet there's video footage of them throwing rocks at the police and trying to start the violence. Now, does that mean that the shops weren't burnt down, that there weren't opportunistic people in the towns of Ferguson and or Baltimore? Of course there were. But the leadership were not about that. But yet the police, before any of the businesses were burnt down or looted, the police were already handling the black people down there with violence. They were already there with their riot gear. They were already there with their tear gas. They were already there with their non-lethals and had their lethal stuff in the line behind them before any of the looting or the burning of buildings happened. So when we look at current history, the African-American community has a legitimate gripe in both Ferguson as well as in Baltimore, as well as a lot of other cities. My clinic is in a predominantly black neighborhood, predominantly poor neighborhood, and they're the highest taxed county, even higher than the one that's right next door, which is the fifth richest county in the country. They are taxed less than the county my clinic is in, which is predominantly black. Okay? So the system is rigged, and this goes all the way back to Cal's ancestors, the Irish, which a lot of people forget that the first slaves in this country were not African.
Sir. Oh, my God. Cal's Irish? That's it.
He is Irish.
Sir. I've decided so that I can get white privilege. I'm no longer Irish. I'm Anglo-Saxon.
Oh man!
He's declaring it today.
Whatever.
A real quick question. Am I the only one that wants to hear Armand saying this?
Don't taste me, bro.
No, actually, I'm there with you, and I'd like John Reitzenheimer to be there as well.
Don't taste me, bro.
I would love to hear John Reitzenheimer be screaming that. But anyways, so when we go back to history, we go back to Jonestown, for example, and you had an uprising in Jonestown, which almost completely burnt the town down to ashes. Mm-hmm. And it was because the Irish and African slaves that were there banded together to fight against the landowners.
Yep.
And they almost were successful at doing it. But the landowners were smart. See, what they did was they decided to create a third class. And this is where a lot of people mistake, and they take the word white privilege and they take it to the extremes, but this is actually what white privilege means. There are actually three classes in this country, and those classes are the 1% white, the landowners, the rest of the white population, and below them would be your minorities. See, back then in 1756, when Jonestown almost burnt down, the landowners knew at that point that they had to create another caste system. They had to create this white caste system, give them a little bit better of everything, give them a little bit better advantage to education, give them a little bit better advantage with laws and ownership of property and things of this nature, in order to keep the indentured servants, ultimately is what they created, from banding with the African slaves and overthrowing landowners. So what they did by doing this was, is they have created this white privilege that actually is nothing but a ruse. It is a ruse in order to call the white man.
When you say third class, are you talking about the middle class?
Well, I mean, that's what we affectionately call it today, but actually that's not what it was when it was created. And I said caste, not class, caste. Because there's a difference between class and caste. You. Right, right. So there was this third caste that was created, and that's you and me. That's you and me and John Lennon over there. And, you know, we're that third caste because none of us are in the 1%. No, we don't own land like that.
I'm declaring my 1%-ishness.
You don't have the bank account to back that up, buddy. I'm sorry.
I would like... I've got the land, though.
No, you still don't have the land. You can't touch the 1%ers' land because 53% of this country is owned by the government. The other 47% is owned by them. So,
right,
we don't have that either. So this is the reason why I kind of disagree with your statement as far as in that there is no white privilege, and there is, but it is an illusion. It is strictly an illusion.
Okay, I'll go with that. You know, and I don't think it's a white privilege. I think that it's a colorful privilege, right?
It's a colorful one, okay.
You know, economical.
Okay. We can call it that. It's
colorful.
We're
talking about third class, right? We're talking about it crosses different economic genres.
Not class. Not C-A, not C-L-A-S-S. He said cast, C-A-S-T.
Cast.
Yeah. Correct.
You know, we're talking about the class, C-L-A-S-S, right?
You are. We're talking about caste, but go ahead. I'll follow along with you. I think you understand what I'm saying. So we'll use either word. They're interchangeable for this.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, growing up in I guess what they call it right now, affluent, right? Not lower class. You know, C-L-A-S-S or upper class, C-L-A-S-S. You know, I grew up in the middle of the road. My parents made too much for me to get granted anything, right? So I couldn't get anything to get into to high school, and I scraped, and, you know, it was really good that they didn't give me a whole bunch of loans because I didn't get strapped down by all that.
Right.
But I learned to make my way through life, right? And a lot of, you know, other people can get stuff. So I actually benefited from this kind of, you know, discrimination that they were dealing with, you know, under affirmative action. Mm-hmm. And so that made my life, right, because I was denied. And I'm thankful for it. But,
within these three castes, and that's caste with a T, you're right, there is a class system, but that has to do with economics, not access to being able to rise up in those economics. So I think that you're talking about you're in the middle road of this class, but you're still a part of that third caste, that invented caste that's an illusion. Now, in that caste, there are varying degrees or class, as you put it, and it's a good descriptor. And I was on the low end of that while you were at the middle end of that. But then there's even amongst the minorities, which is the lowest caste, there is classes even amongst them, because you could even take someone like Oprah Winfrey, who is a multimillionaire, but she's still not white. So though she's a millionaire, she still belongs to that lower caste. It just happens to be the upper class. So you take your football players, you take your...
She'll never get invited to the Skulls prom.
Exactly. She will never be in the Skulls prom. She will never be the debutante of the Skulls prom, okay? So
I got a small violin for her.
Yeah, I'm not really too upset for her either. But my point is this.
You know,
is that
I've often wondered, though, with Obama's rise into power, did he go to Harvard and become one of the Skulls? Is that how he got
that's
in?
Actually, question. There are. That's a good question, but I have not heard nor read even perfect. Amongst the conspiracy theories that he was.
Right. I'm just wondering how he.
Because we know that all, whether it was Clinton or either of the Bushes
are you
or Reagan.
For truth, pal? Really? Truth?
Yes, truth, damn it.
Really?
No, not,
I
ha- not
I
the
haven't
media.
Even seen,
we are the media. We are the ones that tell everybody the truth. So, in our media, not the socialized TV media, our media, yes, we look for the truth. Now, if you're watching Fox News...
Don't get me started on Fox News.
Then you're just not watching the true media.
You're watching infotainment.
That's a son of a bitch.
So I kind of understand where you're coming from and why a lot of people, even mutual friends of Cal's and I, for example, that are kind of in the same boat as what you're talking about, Stephen, that when they use this word white privilege... They think that word means, and even amongst even those black activists, they could use that word white privilege and think that means that every white person has access to be a Donald Trump. That's not how the system is designed. And see, they try to break it down. Even amongst the activists, they try to break it down into this two descriptive paradigm, which is what everything in life, I mean, whether it's politics, whether it's social, whether it's economic, they always try to break it down to two things. But life isn't about two things. Life is about multitudes of things, no matter how you look at it, from a biological, from an environmental, from whatever. It's always more than just two things. So when you look at the word white privilege, it is not saying that means that every white person can become a Donald Trump as far as wealth is concerned. I mean, anybody can get that hair, dude. Just go find a fox, cut
its
tail off, and slap it on your head.
Look, I'm working on it.
I can see it. But what I'm talking about, and I think is probably the real true definition of what white privilege is nothing to do with anything that you or I or Cal or John Lennon has done. We haven't done anything. We were just born white. But it's a system that was designed by, as you put it, a racist government. It was a caste system that was designed and put together in order to cause a separation between the races because they had already seen what happens when races get together. They get their heads cut off, they lose their land, and the very things that they build up to make money gets burnt down to the ground. And then when we look at history, even recent history over the last few years, as more and more people become awake regardless of their race, we see a stark contrast difference in how the authorities and how the government deals with those that are white and those that are non-white. And they're both standing up for constitutional rights that were violated.
Hey, I've got something for John Lennon real quick.
Oh, there goes John. He fell down in his chair. Oh, yeah, I can see Yoko's crying. Yoko's crying over the body right now.
Hey,
oh,
no, that's
sad.
Jamie's crying.
Station break.
Jamie's crying.
We got to do a station break here. It's time to pay some bills. And
okay,
I picked tonight's song.
See you, Steve.
Okay. Hey.
So, of course, if he's going to continue listening, Steve, you're welcome to call back and as we move on to the other topics for tonight after the break. But you're listening to a Muslim and a Catholic, Wake Up in America, here on wakeupinamerica.com, M-E-R-I-C-A. And you're also listening to us on Coffee Party USA, as well as Journalist Revolution Radio. Sorry about that, guys. I almost messed it up there. But we're not getting much love from you here lately. But anyways, we're listening to us on those as well. And tonight I got to pick the song, and I thought it was prevalent for the second half of the show.
Oh, you're not gonna get excited about us working together on this?
Actually, I apologize. We both did work on this together, so I do not want to take any accolades away from my co-host, partner.
No, it's something we agreed upon here, dude. I mean, this is big for our show.
It's huge.
You pick the song. I pick the artist.
That's right.
We're good.
It's huge.
Is it possible for an American Muslim and an Irish Catholic to agree on anything? Issa Hodge and Common Cow go head-to-head every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on their show, A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409.
Horror stories belong around the campfire, not in the garage. Avoid your own automotive horror stories by making an appointment for scheduled maintenance or other necessary services with RC Auto Care. Whether you are fully restoring a classic, building a street rod, wanting a race car, or just needing maintenance completed on your mom-mobile, call RC Auto Care today at 269-762-7358. Let Cal or any of our other highly skilled professionals turn your horror story into a happy ending. RC Auto Care. We make dreams come true.
Always turns in the fastest time.
Giddy up,
409. A four-speed dual quad positive traction,
409. Nothing can catch her, nothing can touch my 409.
Yeah. What do you
prefer? Absolutely
nothing.
Service, we're going to do a quick check of your radio dial.
Most liberal of...
No.
Music for the dead.
I don't even know what that is. Okay, you're good. We can say without a doubt you're listening to the right station.
You're listening to AMAC Radio Network.
You're an activist. You have a cause and an idea. But you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to? The Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
All right, welcome back to A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America. This is your host, Issa.
And I'm the murderer of John Lennon II.
And he winged Yoko, just so that you guys know.
I know, she's happy. Quick and spry for her age, man. She is, I couldn't lead that shot
I
for
saw him doing backflips and Matrix-style bending on that one.
At least I tagged her, though.
That's all right. We got her on the leg. So anyways, welcome back. You're listening to us here on our station, of course, our website here, Wake Up in America, M-E-R-I-C-A, drop the A in the front.com. Hey, I finally got it right, didn't I, John? Yeah. And also, of course, you know you're listening to us over there on Coffee Party USA. Hello, fellas, and Journalist Radio.
Issa, you see...
Journalist... What?
I told you I was changing from Irish to Anglo, and you have not made a comment on anything I'm wearing. I'm going so Anglo, I went for the Trump hairstyle and the Mr. Rogers cardigan sweater. Come on, I am trying so hard to be Anglo here. Do I not fit in?
I've been avoiding the Mr. Rogers outfit because I'm just enjoying the John Lennon outfit that Loki's wearing. I didn't know we were going to dress up tonight. I would have dressed up like Grimace or something. I don't know.
I want some white privilege in my life, man.
Well, if I'd have known it was going to be dress-up night, you dressed up as Mr. Rogers, a drunk one. And then, I'm not going to say that. And John Lennon, I would have dressed up too. I didn't know we were going to do that kind of show. Yeah, see, there you go. Not telling me. Anyways, if you're listening in, you remember that you can always chat with us down there. We'd like to chit-chat with you, or Cal does. Loki does, too. And then also you can call in 646-929-2495 and press 1 to make a comment or to they're chatting with each other. Sorry about that. We're moving on, but before... we move on to the big stuff. Actually, I want to address this Philadelphia shooting, and I want to do it relatively quick if possible, because, to be honest with you, it's kind of getting tiresome having to explain to people, and I have a very quick way, so unless you have a lot to comment on this, I'd like to run through this pretty quickly and make a definitive rant and be done with it. Is that okay with you, Cal, or did you have a lot to say?
I do not have a lot to say, sir. In fact,
relinquish
the floor to the gentleman from Missouri.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, as we all know, that the Philadelphia police say that they were looking to the report of a man accused of trying to assassinate the police officer. They've since caught this man, Edward Archer. And apparently they're also saying, in quotations, an affiliation to a group with radical beliefs. Now, he was quoted to have said, once police got him, he was quoted to have said that he works with ISIS and he did it for Allah. So this is what he has said, that he pledged an allegiance to the ISIS terror group. This was according to Captain James Clark, the commander of Philadelphia Police Department. Now, I do give a standing ovation. If we had that applause button, I would have liked to have pushed it right now to the district attorney as well as the police captain and others, detectives involved in this case.
I got you.
Good day, sir!
There you go.
All right. That's about it. That they did do a press release, reiterating that the actions of this one man should not be painted broadly across all Muslims in America. So I actually commend that. It's a shame that it has to be said that way, but it actually is indicative of the country that we live in, that when an incident happens and they're white or they're black or they're something other than a Muslim, then nothing has to be said
in regards to that. Now, we had the police shooting in New York from the guy from Florida, and you didn't see the New York mayor and the district attorney from New York talking about how, oh, this isn't indicative of all Cubans from Florida. This isn't all Floridians that do this. You know, this is just the rantings of one man. Now, we didn't see that, but we have to always constantly see this crap when this type of stuff happens. And we're actually going to segue into the real thing that I want to talk about some interesting stuff that's come on about war, which is why we played the song there. So basically, everybody knows the story, and of course, everybody's coming to me saying, oh, what about this, and why is this, and this, that, or the other, and I tell people all the time that, you know, I appreciate that you come to me and you ask, which is good, because it's a lot better than what Judge Jeannie Pierro. I don't even like putting the judge in front of that woman's name. She should have been disbarred and incarcerated, and every person she ever convicted should be released from prison, because that woman is a bigoted racist. And I know this personally. I've met her and been on her show. So I can say this 100% factual, that she's a bigoted racist pig.
Tell us how you really feel about her.
I'm trying to be nice here, Cal. Trying to be really nice. But anyway, she went on this big rant, basically berating the prosecuting attorney and the detective and the captain of the Philadelphia Police Department for what they said, because, of course, what they said does not coincide with the agenda that Fox News and other media outlets are pushing. So basically, with that being said, I'm not really going to delve too deep into it. I'm actually going to just do one thing, and I'm going to prove to you, hopefully, listeners, that once and for all, and this is all verifiable, and we've got it up on our website, our Facebook page as well, so that you can go in there and in-depth look at this. I think what we need to do is we need to take a look at history and see what the religion actually taught versus what some of these idiots are out there doing. And I will take you back to 637 A.D. real quick, just this one brief moment, where the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be upon him, wrote a charter of privileges to Christians. And this was written to the monks of St. Catherine Monastery, but actually was written for all Christians, but in this was a direct response to them because they feared that the Muslims were going to come and attack them. Now, the picture of the original letter with the handprint of the Prophet for his signature, because he was illiterate, is actually there. I know that's a contradiction, but therein lies his prophethood. But then next to that picture is a English translation of what that letter says. So I just wanted to read real quick.
Sorry.
It says, so basically I'm gonna let you see what God says in the Quran. And he clearly instructs on the behavior of Muslims towards all kinds of worshipers. If you go to Surah 109, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, it says, in the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, say, O ye disbelievers, I worship not as you worship, nor do you worship as I worship. And I'm not going to worship those that you worship, nor will you worship whom I worship. For you, your religion, and for me, my religion. This is a clear-cut order from God, telling us that to the disbelievers, to them be their worship and to us be our worship, and that we will never worship what you worship and you will never worship what I worship. So to you be your way, to you be your religion, and to me be mine. Now there are a lot of verses in there. And if Allah had enforced his will, this is in chapter 6, 108 and 109, that if God had enforced his will, they would not have set up gods with him. And we have not made thee a keeper over them, nor art thou over them a guardian, and abuse not those whom they call upon besides Allah. Thus unto every people have we caused their doing to seem fair. Them unto the Lord is their return, and he will inform them of what they used to do. So here yet is another place in the Quran where it tells, and this is God talking to the Muslims, that we are not their keeper, that we are not their guardian, and that we leave it in the hands of God, who we believe we will all return to. Now, this isn't church hour, but this is in direct response to the Philadelphia, the San Bernardino thing. I want you guys to understand that what these people are doing is not... Hold on, I'm being messaged, probably telling me to shut up. Oh, okay. All right, so God in the Holy Quran gives a right to everybody to do as they want. Nobody has been made a guardian over the other. Everybody is perfectly free to choose or follow any religion. Freedom of religion is declared in many chapters of the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran, revealed approximately over 1,426 years ago, states most categorically in chapter 2, verse 257, there is no compulsion in your religion, and I say it is the truth from your Lord. Wherefore, let him who will believe, and let him who will disbelieve. So in other words, let those who believe, believe, and let those who disbelieve, disbelieve. But since the period of Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be upon him, Muslims are severely warned against ever persecuting others for their faith. Chapter 2, verse 192. It says, persecution is worse than killing. And then in verse 257, there is no compulsion in matters of religion. We also told, and we have not made thee a keeper over them, nor art thou over them a guardian. Now, a past case, the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be upon him, had welcomed the Christian delegation to pray in the mosque and granted other religious followers full rights of worship and complete freedom of speech. In 632 A.D., the Holy Prophet delivered his final sermon to 10,000 followers. In it, we find mention of some important important proofs of religious tolerance, or key significant is this section that reads, all mankind is from Adam and Eve. An Arab has no superiority over a non-Arab, nor a non-Arab has any superiority over an Arab. Also, a white has no superiority over a black, nor a black have any superiority over a white, except by piety and good action. Learn that all mankind constitutes to one brotherhood. This was the very last message before he died that he gave to the Arabs. Now remember that one day you will appear before God the Creator and you will answer for your deeds, he goes on to say. Now let me present to you a letter, and I'm going to read to you the letter written by the Prophet to the Christians. This is called Prophet Muhammad's Charter of Privileges to Christians. It says, Muslims have been made to promise that they will help defend the followers of other faiths from unjust and cruel attacks. Let me give you a message of Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be upon him, to various kings surrounding the Arab Peninsula, declaring his intention for peace and cooperation. Among these letters included a written in 628 AD to the monks of St. Catherine Monastery in Mount Sinai. In it, he issues a charter of privileges offering secure protection of fundamental human rights to Christians living in Muslim empire. He declares, in this letter, the Prophet of Universal Peace and Harmony outlines how Christians are to be treated by Muslims. Question to ponder upon here, how close is our present-day behavior towards Christians or other religions in light of this letter? In 628 A.D., Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be upon him, granted a charter of privileges to the monks of St. Catherine Monastery in Mount Sinai. It consisted of several clauses covering all aspects of human rights, including such topics as the protections of Christians, freedom of worship and movement, freedom to appoint their own judges, and to own and maintain their property, exemption from military service, and the right to protection in war. The English translation goes as such. This is a message from Muhammad ibn Abdullah, that's the name of Prophet Muhammad. As a covenant of those who adopt Christianity near and far, we are with them. Verily I, the servants, the helpers, and my followers defend them, because Christians are my citizens, and by Allah I hold out against anything that displeases them. No compulsion is to be on them. Neither are their judges to be removed from their jobs, nor their monks from their monasteries. No one is to destroy a house of their religion, to damage it, or carry anything from it to the Muslim houses. Should anyone take any of these, he would spoil God's covenant and disobey his prophet, verily. They are my allies and have my secure charter against all that they hate. No one is to force them to travel or to oblige them to fight. The Muslims are to fight for them. If a female Christian is married to a Muslim, it is not to take place without her approval, and she is not to be prevented from visiting her church to pray. Their churches are to be respected. They are neither to be prevented from repairing them, nor the sacredness of their covenants. No one of the nation of Muslims is to disobey the covenant till the last day. Signed, Muhammad. So this is clear historical proof that the actions of this man here in Philadelphia, as well as the alleged attackers in California and on in France and on and on and on and on in ISIS, are not adhering. And the key point is there that there's a warning from the Prophet that if we do anything that displeases the Christians, then basically on the Day of Judgment, he's not going to know us. So that's all I want to say about that. Because I don't need to defend what this man did. I don't need to talk about, you know, the aspects of this, that, or the other. I don't need to do that because that man did what he did, and that's on him. All I need to talk about is exactly what my prophet said with regards to how we as Muslims are to treat Christians. Period. End of discussion. Kiss my big toe. I'm out. Mic dropped.
And you're right. I mean, and actually, I had a discussion briefly with a mutual friend of ours on how, you know, this guy says he's, you know, shooting the cop in the name of Islam and stuff like that. But, you know, if a Christian goes and does it, oh, there's something wrong with him. So, right. You know, I pose the question, well, why can't we say that about this guy? I mean, look at his picture. He's obviously deranged.
Not quite right in the head.
Right, you know, and so it kind of came down the ladder that, yeah, we and this is what the media needs to stop doing, is classifying mm-hmm. what their religion is and start telling people, hey, this guy was a loon, check his history, he may mm-hmm. have said it was the name of Islam, but God told me to kill, what was the thing with the...
Son of Sam.
So yeah, God, and look how many people he killed.
Devil told him.
Right. You know, well, no, the other, the, migraine.
Do you get migraines when your brain has to work? Might want to see a doc about that there, Kyle.
I only get them when...
It might be a tumor.
When the word is like right here on the tip of the tongue and you can't get it... out the door.
But I mean, there's a lot of them. You have Lofner, for example. I mean, there's a lot of them. You have, I think maybe the one you're talking about is out of Norway. You're talking about...
Zodiac Killer.
And Andrews Breivik, also. You can also right. say Andrews Breivik, because that's within the, right. you know,
but 2011. The Zodiac Killer, in his writings and stuff, his cryptic messages to the police, said that, you know, he was doing God's will, and, you know... So, really, you can't base... anything an individual or group, Ruby Ridge.
Yep, yep, yep.
Jim Jones.
Yep.
You know, the KKK. I'm sorry, you can't take the individual crazy person and believe what they're saying.
Right.
You know,
well, I mean, we've talked about the psychological aspect of taking somebody's life. I mean, look at, you know, the suicide rate amongst soldiers. You know, look at the post-traumatic stress disorder, shell shock, however you want to word it, even from, you know, from American soldiers. And then we're even going to be talking about the IDF, that they've got the highest suicide rate of all armies in the world. They have the highest suicide rate. Well, I mean, of course you do. I mean, taking somebody's life, period, is not an easy thing to do unless something is not right in your head. Sociopath, you know, psychopath, you know, there's something not quite right. Taking somebody's life is hard. If we look at victims survived, you know, after shooting an intruder or fighting off and killing a rapist, I mean, they are psychologically damaged for some time after that, even though they were completely justified in what they did by having to defend themselves. But psychological case study after psychological case study shows that there is a psychological breakdown within the human being, the normal, healthy, normal psychologically healthy human, that when they have to take a life, that there is damage that is done there, even when it's justified. So you could imagine what it's like when it's unjustified, which, you know, kind of segues us into, you know, the second part. You know, thank you for adding that in there, but I really didn't want to spend too much time, just that time right there, to just to tell the truth.
All right. I just wanted to get my two cents in.
I appreciate it. I appreciate that, most definitely. But good news for war manufacturers.
Oh, yes, you know, yes.
Yeah, good news. They dropped 23,144 bombs in the year 2015.
Oh, and I've got some nice statistics here for you to go over.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm just going to go back to the 1950s, okay? And all the countries that America has bombed just since the 1950s.
We're talking about 65 years, or 75 years.
Right. Just
75 years.
Yeah. 1950 to 53, of course, is Korea and China. Mm-hmm. 1954, Guatemala. 1958, mm-hmm. Indonesia. 1959 to 1961, Cuba. Mm-hmm. 1960, we go back to Guatemala. Mm-hmm. 1964, the Congo. Mm-hmm. 1964 to 1973, 9 years, bombing Laos. 1961 to 1973, now we're 12 years, bombing Vietnam. Mm-hmm. 1969 to 1970, Cambodia. 1967 to 1969, we go back to Guatemala. Are you noticing a trend there?
Oh, yeah, I'm noticing. Okay. Yeah.
We got nobody else to bomb? Bomb Guatemala!
Ah, the heck with it. We're bored.
Grenada, 1983. Lebanon, 1983 and 1984, both Lebanese and Syrian targets. Here we go. Libya, 1986. 1980s.
A decade.
El Salvador and Nicaragua.
All South American, yeah.
Yeah. 1987, we start. Iran.
Yep.
1989, Panama. 1991, Iraq. 1991, Kuwait. 1993, Somalia. 1994 and 95, Bosnia. 1998, Sudan. We took a break in 97. But we made up for it. 1998 was Sudan and Afghanistan. Then in 1999, Yugoslavia. Took a break in 2000 and 2001 just to attack in 2002 to repeat in Yemen. Then back to Iraq, 1991 through 2003, and that was us and the UK bombing them for 12 years. And then 2003 to 2015, just us bombing Iraq. So we had to add an additional 12 years on top
of that. On top of the other 12
so
years of
24 years
awkwardly bombing them. Yeah,
24 okay. year stretch of bombing Iraq, not including 1991, but you know we'll segue that one. 2001 to 2015, Afghanistan. 2007 to 2015, Pakistan. 2007. And all the way up to 2007, 2008, and 2011, we gave them a little break there, with Somalia. And then 2009, 2011, Yemen again. 2011, 2015, Libya. 2014 through 2015, and current, Syria.
Mm-hmm. So we basically...
War is good!
3 years. So basically, there's only 3 years... In 75 years that we did not actually bomb anybody.
No. You got to go back. There was one. I'm sorry. We did bomb Iran in 1987. I'm sorry. That was my fault. No, yeah. There was not a year that we didn't bomb somebody. Not a one since 19. And sometimes we doubled up.
or quadruple. So a lot of these.
You get a bomb, and you get a bomb, and you get everybody gets a bomb.
It was the Oprah show all around the world with bombs instead of cars. Yes,
there has not been a single year since 1950 that we have not performed bombing raids on other countries. For different reasons, of course. Oh, wait, no, they're all still the same reason. Greed.
All the same.
Greed. All every one of them. Now,
ironically, they're all the same reasons they sell us as well. They're the enemies. They're the bad guys. We must kill them, because otherwise, if we don't kill them, they will come and kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So this begs a question. If you look at 75 years, I did not know it was that extensive. 75 years of bombing multiple countries, going from Africa, you know, going from Indonesia, Asia, to Africa, to South America, back to Africa, back to South America, back to Africa, back to South America, back to, over to, let's throw in, you know, the Arab countries, and still let's go ahead and bomb Africa, and oh, by the way, Guantanamo, we're not done with you, we're coming back to you again, then we're going to go back over to Arab and African countries, and then that's where we're going to focus over the last, oh my goodness, I did not know it was that extensive.
Yeah, and that's just since 1950. I mean, if you really go back, I mean, hell, I mean, as we all know, World War II was a mess. It really was. I mean, you're talking millions upon millions of deaths on, I mean, hell, USSR alone during World War II, 12 million military deaths, 17 million civilian deaths, 29 million just from the USSR alone.
Now, see, you know, there's this rumor or this conspiracy that's going around. And actually, I've actually heard David Rothschild actually say this on the BBC. And ironically enough, we don't see him being quoted in the news anymore, nor being asked to interview anymore. But he let slip about depopulation. Uh-huh. I don't remember the quote exactly, but he basically did say that there was a need to depopulate the Earth. And
we look
at World War One and World War Two.
We depopulate the Earth very well.
With the World War, yeah. And this is where we're headed right now. I mean, Syria is the back door to Iran, which, of course, at that point, Russia and China and them have no choice but to get involved.
Let's put it into figurative terms here, so you can get kind of an idea. Okay, I just told you USSR, 12 million military, 17 million civilian, total of 29 million people dead in the USSR in World War II. Okay? Right. Do you know what the deaths were for the United States in World War II?
Please tell us.
Military, 407,000. Civilian, 6,000. For a grand total of 413,000.
Mm-hmm.
Poland, total 6.27 million. Germany, 5.6 million. Yugoslavia had 1.66 million. Now, even Romania had 915,000. We had a total of 413,000. We're very proficient at genocide. Very.
Well, there's that, but also you have to understand that we were also late getting into that war, number one. Number two, it wasn't in our back door. I mean, it wasn't in our yard. It was in the European yard. Mm-hmm. So that look at that scale is going to be skewed simply because of location.
Okay, I'll put it on. That's why I brought in Poland, because that was the first strike. But I'll even put it on a venue for the people that were over there that are always our allies since we left them. Mm-hmm. Great Britain, military deaths, 403,000. Civilian deaths, 92,700, for a grand total of 495,000. So they're still just under 500,000, and they were in the skirmish.
And they were, yeah, I mean, with the nightly aerial bombings from the Blitzkriegs from Germany, that does tell a big story, because of course we know that United States war manufacturers were. This is where the Lusitania comes into play. Lusitania is what was used for us to get involved in the war, because the Americans didn't actually want to get involved in World War II at all, European War. Most Americans didn't. But they used the Lusitanian as an example, and what it was, the Lusitania was for our listeners, it was a luxury liner, usually would transport wealthier to do New Yorkers and East Coasters, to and from England.
And then it was converted.
So what?
And it was converted during the war.
No. Actually, what happened was they actually were sneaking weapons from the U.S. on the belly and still using it as a luxury liner. And the ironic thing was is that Germany knew this, And for 2 weeks prior to the bombing of Lusitania, they actually put ads, Germany, the country of Germany, actually put ads in American papers saying, do not get on the Lusitania. It is violating, you know, international rules of war.
Right.
And they are using it to smuggle weapons into England. Do not get on it.
Now, do you want to hear a really good turn of events? And this tells you where we started to understand the population control issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just in comparison of World War I to World War II. World War I, 95% of the deaths were military, 5% civilian.
Mm-hmm.
World War II, 33% were military, 67% were civilian.
Mm. And both World Wars were fought in Europe. Both World Wars were fought in backyards of people.
Mm-hmm. But how? Well, but yeah, I mean, there. Basically, you had the same contenders, pretty much. I mean, we didn't have Japan in World War I, but for the most part, it was on the European front. Most of the same people were involved.
Correct.
What changed it so drastically from only 5% of civilians dead on the same soil, now we have 67% of civilians dead?
Well, there was one of the contributing factors was a huge advancement in war munitions,
right.
Bombs.
Right.
That was one of the biggest deciding factors. So let's bring this, because somebody's maybe listening right now saying, oh, well, that was World War II, and that was Hitler, and he was killing Jews.
Okay,
I'll
bring it up into modern times. How's this?
All right.
Okay. Just in 2015, we dropped a grand total of 23,144 bombs. I'm going to start from the bottom just so you can see this escalation here.
Now, mind you, I'm going to add a caveat. This is during the Nobel Peace Prize winning President Obama's term. Okay? Yes. Just I'm going to add that caveat.
Yes. And this is on all weapons platforms for bombs, all different types of bombs. Okay. So 23,144 bombs in just 1 year. By the way, largest bombing in history.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest record of bombing in history. Somalia, 18 bombs. Yemen, 58 bombs. Pakistan, 11 bombs. Afghanistan, 947 bombs. Iraq and Syria, 22,110 bombs.
So the shock and awe in Iraq wasn't enough for them.
Mm-mm.
They went for the shake, rattle, and roll.
They went for let's make this place a crater.
You know what's funny is that I've got the same chart up that you have there. What's interesting is this is not counting drone strikes.
No.
This is only aerial bombardments because it's not counting drone strikes.
Right. It's not individual drones.
Because those are missiles and not bombs.
Right. That was just bombs.
Just the bombs.
Yep. Now, in today's age, how necessary are, well, we call them dumb bombs because they're not like the smart missiles that can track or anything like that. Knowing that we're fighting not a country, but a group of people instead of a country. I guess basically I'd be better to say knowing we're fighting an ideology instead of an entire country. Why would we go through and bomb? Wouldn't we do better with the smart missiles and, you know, the individualization of targets? Because, I mean, even our gunships, you can see, I've seen lots of videos of, you know, gunships, the A-10s and everything flying around and just taking out entire plazas full of people to get two or three people. Mm-hmm. And usually you see those two or three people leave and everybody else is dead in the streets.
Right.
So,
well, we talked about the drone strikes. I actually have those numbers up.
Okay.
So we can go ahead and add these numbers. In Pakistan, CIA drone strikes, total of 422. 371 of those were ordered directly from Obama. Okay? Total number killed was 4,000, 3,994.
And how many of those were people they were actually aiming for? That's my question.
They say 423.
So
10% of the intended target. 10%
of intended target. 10%.
This isn't counting the injured at 1738 also.
In modern technology, we can only get 10%?
Yeah, that's smart bombs for you. Right? Now, that was just
that's
in Pakistan.
That's not so smart.
Hold on. That was just in Pakistan.
You went full retard, man. Never
this
go full retard.
Yemen. Now, this one was classified under U.S. covert action of 128. 729 were killed. And 65 were intended targets. So 10% again.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Somalia. Actually, they were a little nice to Somalia. Only 22.
Yeah, but Somalia's, well, it's in the name. It's Somal. Yeah.
Read how many bombs were dropped.
22.
Okay, 22 bombs?
I got 18. I got 18 bombs.
18 bombs, 22 drone strikes, killing 126 people, and 8 were the intended target.
That's not good odds.
That's not good odds at all.
I think I can do better with both my hands broken on Call of Duty 3.
You actually have to play to be able to do that, buddy.
Shut up. I have to have time to play.
That's what I'm talking about. Now, in Afghanistan, being the last one, there were only 20 in 2015. And they only killed 55 people, but the intended targets were 6. They're still looking at 10%, basically. Across the board, it is 10%, no matter where you go.
Hey, let's put it this way.
By the way, I got this from the Bureau of Investigation from Journalism,
so
that people know.
Take all these people that are in charge of being able to push the button and do these strikes and say we're allowed to do these bombings and the ones that give the orders and everything. Give their accuracy their pay rate. So if they can only make 10%, they should only get 10% of their pay. I bet they become more accurate.
Well, I bet if you actually put prison sentences tied to their inaccuracy...
Ooh, nice!
They would actually be more accurate.
Yeah!
Prison sentence with Bubba taking their cornbread, they would become extremely accurate at that point.
Pac-Man.
John Lennon said he did better at Pac-Man. So you know, the thing is that...
I did better at asteroids. Damn. Space Invaders, I was whooped. Same with Centipede, man. I had no civilian casualties.
So a lot of times we hear from people, how come we're not upset with what Israel is doing? Well, this is a lot of the reason why what we're talking about right here. Now, these are verifiable stats that you can look up, but these are not being talked about in mainstream media. This information isn't being taught. This isn't just lives that are being lost, okay? This is also, you know, taxpayers. This is also not keeping us safe. Now, I've said this before, and I'm starting to believe it more and more and more with everything that I'm researching, everything that I'm learning, everything that I'm seeing, is that they say that the more we bomb them, the more safe that we will be. But in fact, you're actually just adding fuel to the fire. You're creating more of the things that we don't want, which is attacks on us. But then, at the same time, I shared a video of a past guest of ours, Ken O'Keefe.
Hey,
and
you want to hear something really funny for a statistic for you?
What's that?
Take a wild guess. In 2013, between July 8th and August 6th, how many rockets were fired from Israel to Gaza?
Please tell me. I remember we talked about it, but I don't remember the exact number.
Okay,
I know it's tens of thousands.
No, but it's only 1 month. I'm only taking 1 month. In 1 month's time, 3,360 rockets.
And that's tax. That's our tax dollars right there.
Yes. Yes. And just so you know, intended targets hit. Intended targets.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually less than 3%.
So they just really. So, I mean, let's take a look at this. Jokes aside here, because this is serious here in a sense. Let's look at this. When we were joking about the accuracy, we're joking about this, that, or the other. But, I mean, let's look at the ramifications of this number of bombs and drone strikes that we're doing. And our taxes are paying for this, people. And then at the same time, our taxes are also paying for this Iron Dome system that shot over 3,000 missiles in 1 month. Into a population, Gaza, which is 1.8 million people packed into a very small area, with a state that has no army, that has no military, that has no planes, no Iron Dome, no naval bases, no nothing, except for the homemade bombs that they can make, which are equivalent of an M80 in a tube, mm-hmm. that gets shot over a wall. What I always find ironic is, they can say, oh, well, look at the missiles they shoot over the wall. Okay, let's look at the missiles that they shoot over the wall. Why is there a wall? Why is it one of your questions, not only let's look at the missiles that they're shooting, but let's also look at why is there a freaking wall? But anyways, I digress. Anyways, so we look at all these things, and we wonder why it is so easy for us to allow, and why there's so many Americans that defend Israel, you know, fervently defend Israel and its war crimes. But here's the kicker, people. You know, they were tried for war crimes. Okay, they were tried in Brussels, actually, for war crimes in Gaza during their Operation Protective Edge. All right, and there's actually a website that gives you the full testimony. Now, the likes of filmmaker Ken Loach and music legend Roger Waters, international renowned lawyers such as Michael Mansfield, QC, former jury, while expert witnesses from Gaza and beyond testified to the atrocities of a 50-day offensive. Now, having borne personal witness to the unimaginable brutality and carnage of Israel's onslaught while Gaza in August that year, 2014, much of today was like live-action replay evoking the same fears. Now, 16-year-old boy stripped naked and used as a human shield by Israel for 5 days. He was denied food or water and slept and mentally and physically abused, including lashed with a wire across his back. An Israeli army stopped a family car near a West Bank protest over Gaza, positioned the weapons in the windows of the back doors where toddlers were sitting and began to fire on protesters. This is not an isolated incident. This is clear and recorded pattern of Israel using Palestinian children as human shields during attacks in Gaza. This is from Max Blumenthal, American author and journalist and blogger. They found one of 89 families completely liquidated during Operation Protective Edge, so badly burned or destroyed that they had to be buried in mass graves by a bulldozer, evoking memories of the darkest times in Europe history. On outskirts of Rafah, they heard testimony from a 19-year-old, Muhammad Abu Said, of how Israel soldiers stripped him naked and sniped at neighbors, then set the dogs on him in between shooting rounds. In Khuza, a man left a group of resistant fighters in his home. He returned to find their throats had been cut, their bodies piled in a corner and burnt with grenades. A clear pattern of execution has been established. Israeli soldiers gather civilians in an open area, ask if anyone speaks Hebrew. When people step forward, they shoot them dead. Four brothers of one man were taken into garden and shot dead. One of them was mentally disabled and had little idea that he was being killed. More than 90% of Gaza and agriculture output destroyed by Israel over summer. Almost all farms destroyed. Israel destroyed 220 factories in Gaza. This list goes on and on and on, to be honest with you. It's actually getting quite sad to read the eyewitnesses, not just Palestinian eyewitnesses, but actually activists as well. I'm going to post this on our chat room here for those of you, and it's also already on our Facebook page. You can go ahead and finish reading that.
I've just... I got a compilation how the eccentricities and the comedy, the correlation between the U.S. and Israel really hits home. I mean, I'm just going to start reading it, and you guys can follow along. These are areas that were bombed by Israel in 2014. Sudan, 35.4 million people, 96.7% Muslim. Palestine, 1.8 million people, 98% Muslim. Syria, 17.9 million people, 87% Muslim. Lebanon, 5.9 million people, 54% Muslim. And here are the four countries bombed by the U.S. in 2014. Yemen, 26 million people, 99% Muslim. Pakistan, 196 million, 96% Muslim. Afghanistan, 31.8 million people, 80% Muslim. Somalia, 10.4 million people, 99% Muslim. Now, prior to 2014, the Obama administration carried out bombing campaigns in Libya and Iraq also, bringing the total number of countries attacked by the U.S. and Israel in recent years to 10. In each case, the country attacked was predominantly Muslim population.
So this begs the question, and that the average American citizen needs to begin to ask themselves,
how much is Israel in control? Now, we had talked...
Well, no, I was actually going to go a little bit deeper than that. The question I would think that they need to ask themselves is, out of all the countries we've named that we are actively bombing, not just what our taxes are paying for in Israel, because they can argue out of that, but who we are actively bombing, how many of those countries have actually attacked us? That's question number one. Question number two that needs to be asked amongst the Muslim, that's right, the answer is zero. Of course, we know that, but they need to think this. They need to draw these conclusions on their own. The other question that needs to be asked, and this needs to be asked to the Islamic countries, why are you allowing the American government to kill your citizens?
Because they don't know any better, and the worst part is we had this discussion in our other
show,
way back,
right? God,
I'm pulling out some memories here, buddy.
Don't get a migraine.
Well, you remember when we talked about when they passed the thing that Israel could use our troops?
Correct, I remember that show.
Without asking for permission.
Correct.
So my question at this point is: they're saying that it was our troops bombing these countries, but was it under our direction or theirs?
It's a good question to ask as well.
Who was saying bomb these countries? Because we know from our past shows and from the laws that they passed that Israel can direct our military.
They can sequester our military.
Right, to do their bidding.
Right, to use them to fight anywhere in the world, even here in the United States.
Yes. Which, that's going to be a sad day in hell.
Well, it's highly unlikely that'll ever happen, but yes, that will be a sad day. But you know what's weird is that according, and this is off Pertz I read, that according to the IDF data, in the past 3 years, suicide has actually claimed more soldiers' lives than operational activity, accidents, or even illness. That most of these suicide victims served in the home front, meaning that they served in the front lines that where the illegal settlers are and the Palestinian towns are. The primary cause of death among soldiers serving in Israel Defense Force is suicide. And according to this analysis of data covering the past 3 years, of 2011, the most recent year for which official Army data, 21 soldiers took their own lives, started in 2001. Now, this has gained... Now, think about that. In 2001,
The number one reason for the IDF to die was suicide, and only 21 soldiers died by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of a threat is the Palestinians if by 2015 the number only went up to 28?
Oh, they're scary. They're scary.
Now, how? I mean, more Israeli soldiers die from suicide than from Palestinians. So this just shows a more disparaging difference between what we fund. Oh, it's just a sad day. Anyways, we're at that time. We're out of time. We're at that point in the show where we wind it down. And our Irish jig should be coming up. I do not think that we got the John Lennon's Idiot of the Week. Do you have an Idiot of the Week? Because we got 5 minutes, so I think I can...
I think we've already pretty much said what the Idiot of the Week is, and that's...
I don't know.
That's the American people.
Well, you got a good one for us you could do in a couple of minutes? No, he's got nothing. Yeah, we haven't been... John Lennon hasn't had a chance to do his Idiot of the Week here lately. We've been monopolizing our show. Imagine that. But, hey, we'll get you next week. We'll give you two next week. How about that? Yeah? Yeah, I'm not going to promise, but I'm going to do my best.
You're allowed to talk, Loki.
Yeah. If I'm actually speaking to you, that gives you permission to speak.
Oh, indentured servitude. Speak when spoken to.
That's right. I got the finger again. All right. Well, that's it for us here. You know, we covered a lot of things here, a lot of things that are provocative, a lot of things that we got to think about, and you need to do your research. Don't jump to conclusions.
Yeah, don't hit the first three topics on Google. You know, scroll down and actually read through the BS. You know, don't just hit the top three.
Yeah, skip to page 20. That's when you start getting independent journalism, all right, which is where you'll find real journalism and not the media. But we posed some questions tonight about white privilege. You know, do the Oregon ranchers overtaking the federal building have white privilege to be able to do what they're doing? At the same time, they are standing up for the right thing. The government is overreaching their authority. So these are two very good questions about that situation that's going on there. And of course, we also talked about the number of bombs that we dropped and the number of people that we're killing. The sad thing is, we're all accountable for it. And number one, we're paying into a tax system that is unconstitutional, that we should not be paying into, but yet we continue to do that. If we actually stood together, regardless of what you think about my faith or Cal's haircut or Loki's dyed hair, even if you just put those differences aside and actually we changed the tax system as it is and got rid of it or changed it to the point where they cannot take 47% of our wealth in order for them to buy more bombs, to kill more people, I mean, we could solve a lot of problems with doing just one thing, but alas, don't see it happening. But
alas, where's alas? Oh, you mean all? Okay, I'm sorry.
There you go, you got it. Anyways, you brought up a lot of queries, a lot of good points, things that you got to ask a lot of questions, research and ask. Raise your hand. You know, this thing is a stupid question, only a stupid person that doesn't ask a question. So I would give you a good night and let Cal take us out.
As we always bring up, people, do your own research, educate yourself, don't listen to the media. And as always, I'm sorry, this is going to be my personal outro from now on because I still love this to this day.
The question is, do police use the taser properly?
Well, that's the $1 million question.
Oh. I think that was the wrong one there, buddy.
No, it was $1 million question, man.
60 seconds.
I thought you were going to play the taser.
Oh, you thought, okay, I'll play that one for you then.
The taser uses compressed gas to fire two small darts attached to copper wires. When they pierce the skin, the electric current flows through the body, seizing up the muscles and sending the suspect crashing to the ground, screaming in pain.
I'm sorry. We got kind of down towards the end there, so I had to bring us back up before we left out, you know.
I can hear him say, those Muslims are tasing me! Those Muslims are tasing me!
All righty, people. We love you all. Good night.